how excellent that you sing so well and sober. In the church in the 18th century, generally, a cappella, there being no instrumentation amongst the Puritans, as the ornamentation had to be an oodle. So much for that. You might like to be upstanding. We are just prior to the sermon, and you might want to stretch your leg for a moment. You feel the need? Yes, yes. I promise not 4 hours. Thank you. I'm sometimes queried on my connection with Unitarianism. Theophilus Stephen Lindsay, Joseph Priestley, Dr. Price, and myself helped to form the Essex Street Chapel Unitarian in England in 1767, well before it came upon these shores. I am pleased to be among Unitarians, infrequently. I am a member of Christ Church Episcopal, and I am infrequent there as well. My moiety for the building of the Jewish Temple in Philadelphia, one of the second largest. This gives me a whole other Sabbath to absent myself from the public work. Indeed, you may find wherever churches need support and help, my portion is readily available to them. When the good Christian ministers closed their pulpit to the great American preacher, Whitfield. You see what happens when you get old. I built the great hall at Philadelphia that he might be attended to. His worship with my common here and preach. Eloquent preacher, I once heard him speak in the open air to a crowd that I estimated was 10,000 people. Wonderful. So that has become the Academy of Philadelphia and now the University of Pennsylvania. So after all, it came to some good use. I prefer to worship 6-7 days a week in the Lord's Church, the Almighty Church of the Almighty God. I study nature. I examine and learn from it. I care not for morality in it, but why and how and what is it? This is what makes me, I think, as pious as those who cry out, Lord, Lord, on the Sabbath. But I had early religious instruction. From my early days, because of the accident of my birth, my father pledged me tithe of his sons. Did I mention I was tithing? My father was a tithing man. I was the 10th son born and pledged me tithe. I was to go on Harvard and become a Puritan minister. Tis a good thing it did not happen. When you think of what I did to King George and his earthly empire, what I might have done with my hands on God's heavenly kingdom. My parents had early given me religious impressions and brought me through my childhood piously in the dissenting way. But I was scarce 15 when, after doubting by turns of several points as I found them disputed in different books that I read, I began to doubt of revelation itself. Some books on deism fell into my hands. They were said to be the substance of sermons preached at Boyle's lectures in the mother country. It happened that they wrought an effect upon me quite contrary to what was intended by them. For the arguments of the deists, which were quoted to be refuted, appeared to me to be much stronger than the reputations. In short, I soon became a thorough deist. My arguments perverted some others, particularly Collins, my friend, and James Ralph, but each of them having afterward wronged me greatly without the least compunction, and I recollecting Governor Keith's conduct toward me, who was another free thinker, and my own toward Master Vernon and poor Miss Reed, I made up amends, I married her, for 4 years of reparations. These conducts at times gave me great great trouble, and I began to suspect that this doctrine, though it might be true, was not very useful. My London pamphlet, which had for its motto these lines of Dryden, "Whatever is right. Though pure blind man sees but a part of the chain, the nearest link, his eyes not carrying to the equal beam that poises all above, and from the attributes of God, his infinite wisdom, goodness, and power, concluded that I, that nothing possibly could be wrong in the world, and that vice and virtue were empty distinctions, no such things existing, this appeared now not so clever a performance as I once thought it, and I doubted whether some error had not insinuated itself unperceived into my argument, so as to infect all that followed, as is common in metaphysical reasonings. I grew convinced that truth, sincerity, and integrity in dealings between man and man were of the utmost importance to the felicity of life. And I formed written resolutions, which still remain in my journal book, to practice them wherever I lived. Revelation had indeed no weight with me as such, but I entertained an opinion that though certain actions might not be bad because they were forbidden by it, or good because it commanded them, yet probably these actions might be forbidden because they were bad for us, or commanded because they were beneficial to us in their own natures, all the circumstances of things being considered. And this persuasion, with some kind hand of providence or some guardian angel, or accidental favorable circumstances and situations, or altogether, preserved me through this dangerous time of youth and the hazardous situation I sometimes was in among strangers, remote from the eye and advice of my father, preserved me without any willful, gross immorality or injustice that might have been expected from my want of religion. I say willful because the instances I have mentioned had something of a necessity in them from my youth, inexperience, and the knavery of others. I had therefore a tolerable character to begin the world with. I valued it properly, and I determined to preserve it. I had been religiously educated as a Presbyterian, the process of worship, the organization of the church and meeting. And though some of the dogmas of that persuasion, such as the eternal decrees of God, election, reprobation, etc., appeared to me to be unintelligible, others doubtful, I early absented myself from the public assemblies of the sect. Sunday being my studying day, I was never without some religious principles. I never doubted, for instance, the existence of the deity, that he made the world, that he governed it by his providence, that the most acceptable service of God was doing good to man, that our souls are immortal, and that all crime will be punished, and virtue rewarded either here or hereafter. These I esteem the essentials of every religion, and being to be found in all the religions we had in our country, I respected them all, though with different degrees of respect, as I found them more or less mixed with other articles which, without any tendency to inspire, to promote, or to confirm morality, served principally to divide us and make us unfriendly one to another. Disrespect to all, with an opinion that the worst had some good effects, induced me to avoid all discourse that might tend to lessen the good opinion another might have of his own religion. And as our province increased in people, and new places of worship were continually wanted and generally erected by voluntary contribution, my might for such a purpose, whatever might be the sect, was never refused. Though I seldom attended any public worship, I still had an opinion as to its propriety and of its utility when rightly conducted, and I regularly paid my annual subscription for the support of the only Presbyterian minister or meeting we had in Philadelphia, and at Christ Church, where I might lie next to my Deborah in the graveyard. He used to visit me, the minister from the Presbyterians, sometimes as a friend, and admonished me to attend his administration, and I was now and then prevailed on to do so. Once, for 5 Sundays successively. Had he been, in my opinion, a good preacher, perhaps I might have continued. But his discourses were either polemic arguments or explications of the peculiar doctrines of our sect, and were, to me, all very dry and uninteresting and unedifying, since not a single moral principle was inculcated or enforced, their aim simply being to rather make us Presbyterians than good citizens. At length, he took for his text that verse of the 4th chapter of Philippians, quote, "Finally, brethren, whatever so things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, or of good report, if there be any virtue or any praise, think upon these things." Now I imagine in a sermon of such a text, we could not miss of having some morality, but he confined himself to 5 points only as meant by the apostle. That is, 1, keeping holy the Sabbath day, 2, being diligent in reading the scriptures, 3, attending daily the public worship, 4, partaking of the sacrament, and 5, paying a due respect to God's ministers. Now these all might have been good things, but they are not the kind of good things that I expected from that text. I despaired of ever meeting with them from any other, was disgusted, and attended his preaching no more. I think vital religion has always suffered when orthodoxy is more regarded than virtue. The scriptures assure me that in the last day we shall not be examined on what we thought, but what we did. And our recommendation will not be that we said, "Lord, Lord," but that we did good to our fellow creatures. See Matthew chapter 25. For my own part, when I am employed in serving others, I do not look upon myself as conferring favors, but as paying debts. In my travels, and since my settlement, I have received the kindness from men to whom I shall never have the least opportunity of making direct return, and numberless mercies from God, who is infinitely above being benefited by our services. Those kindnesses from men I can therefore only return to their fellow men, and I can only show my gratitude for those mercies from God by a readiness to help his other children and my brethren. For I do not think that thanks and compliments, though repeated weekly, can discharge our real obligations to each other, much less than to our Creator. You see, by this, my notion of good works, that I am far from expecting to merit heaven by them, but heaven, we understand, is a state of happiness, infinite in degree and eternal in duration. I can do nothing to deserve such rewards. He, for the giving a draught of water to a thirsty person, should expect to be paid with a good plantation, would be modest in his demands compared with those who think they deserve heaven with what little good they do here on earth. Even the mixed, imperfect pleasures we enjoy in this world are rather from God's goodness than from our own merit. How much more than the happiness of heaven? For my own part, I have not the vanity to think I deserve it, the folly to expect it, nor the ambition to desire it, but content myself to submitting to the will and disposal of that God who hath made me, who has hitherto preserved and blessed me, and in whose fatherly goodness I may well confide, that he will never make me miserable, and that even the afflictions I may at any time suffer shall tend to my own benefit. Faith doubtless has its use in the world, and I do not desire to see it diminished, nor would I endeavor to lessen it in any man. But I wish it were more productive of good works than I have generally seen it. I mean, real good works, works of kindness, charity, mercy, and public spirit, not holiday keeping or sermon reading or hearing, performing church ceremonies, or making long prayers filled with flatteries and compliments, despised even by wise men and much less capable of pleasing the deity. The worship of God is a duty. The hearing and reading of sermons may be useful, but if men rest in hearing and praying, as too many do, it is as if a tree should value itself on being watered and putting forth leaves, though it never produced any fruit. The great master thought much less of these outward appearances and professions than many of his modern disciples. He preferred the doers of the word to the mere hearers, the son that seemingly refused to obey his father and yet performed his commands, to him that professed his readiness but neglected the work, the heretical but charitable Samaritan, to the uncharitable though orthodox priest and sanctified Levite, and those who gave food to the hungry, drink to the thirsty, raiment to the naked, entertainment to the stranger, relief to the sick. Though they never heard his name, he declared, shall in the last day be accepted by those who cried, Lord, Lord, who value themselves and their faith, though great enough to perform miracles, but have neglected good works, shall be rejected. A man full of words and not of deeds is like a garden full of weeds. No child. The pity is that good works among these sorts of people are so little valued, and good words admired in their stead, I mean seemingly pious discourses instead of humane benevolent actions. These they almost put out of the countenance. They pucker up their noses as if they smelt a stink, and at the same time they eagerly snuff up an empty canting harangue, as if we're opposing of the choicest flower. So they have inverted the good old verse, and they say, a man full of deeds and not of words is like a garden full of, I have forgot the rhyme, but remember it's quite the reverse of a perfume. So much by way of commentary. Life, like a dramatic piece, should not only be conducted with regularity, but methinks it should finish handsomely. Being now in the last act, I begin to cast about for something fit to end with, or if mine be more comfortably prepared to it, compared to an epigram, some few lines are but barely tolerable and very desirous of concluding with a bright point. In such an enterprise, I could spend the remainder of life with pleasure. And I firmly believe God would bless us with success if we undertook it with a sincere regard to his honor, and, which is the same thing, the public.